Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott.
I'm Ben. As always, we're joined by our super producer, Tristan the Red McNeil.
The Red?
Yeah.
Really? The
well,
Red?
I don't know. It sounds dramatic.
Maybe it does. It does. I don't have one right off the top of my head,
okay,
but
well,
maybe...
we'll find one.
Yeah, maybe.
So, longtime listeners, you know this already, ladies and gentlemen. In every episode, Scott and I endeavor to give our super producer a nickname.
Yeah.
Oh, along with our editor, Dylan Fagan.
And we try to be clever about it. Try to.
Try. We
doesn't
make
always...
a... We make an attempt.
It doesn't always work. Yeah.
It doesn't always work.
Usually related to the episode, mostly related to the episode. So we'll try during the end of this one, or by the end of this one,
mm-hmm.
rather, to come up with something that's a little bit more fitting, maybe.
Yeah, and if you think of one in the course of this, go ahead and drop us a line somewhere via the internet, or, you know, you could send a pigeon or a smoke signal, however you get the word out to people.
Carrier pigeon, really?
Yeah, or you could send a truck.
Yeah.
Across the Arctic waste.
Hey, why not? I mean, I guess it's the end of the season, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a great time to do it, but if you are so inclined, you could drive a truck across an ice road and deliver that message.
And that is the subject of today's episode, inspired by our friend of the show, who you've heard from before, Rudy Smith.
Yeah, Rudy wrote in, and actually it wasn't even really a suggestion for a show, I don't think.
I don't know who it was.
It was just kind of a link to an article, which is of interest, and it was of interest, by the way. I mean, obviously, we both decided that this would make a good topic. So he sent in, I think it's called BoardPanda.com, has an article that's called, and this is a long title, How We Tried to Deliver 12 Tons of Food to Siberia's Arctic North. And I thought, well, that's an interesting headline. Let me click on the link and see what it says. And it's all about ice road trucking in Siberia's Arctic North. And it's fascinating. I mean, the article, this is one that I honestly, I recommend you look at it. It's not going to take you more than 5 minutes to read it because it's very light on text.
Right.
But it's heavy on pictures. And the pictures are really, really interesting because it gives you a good grasp of what these guys are up against daily on this road. And this is just one of many, many roads. And we'll talk about lots of different roads and where they are and some of the lengths and some of the requirements and things like that along the way. But
mm-hmm.
I think just in general, ice roads are really a fascinating thing. They're a seasonal thing, of course. And we're at the end of that right now. So, you know, keep this in your back pocket until next fall, maybe, the end of fall.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you can head out and hit one of the ice roads that are out there because that's far more than I ever expected.
This is way more common than a lot of people might imagine. So let's define the term first. An ice road is, obviously, it's what it sounds like, but there's a little more to it. It's also known as an ice bridge because what we're describing is actually part of a system called a winter road.
Yeah, and Ben, just one quick thing before we progress to exactly what they are and, you know, define them and everything. A lot of people will be familiar with this from the show Ice Road Truckers that's on A&E, the History Channel that's owned by A&E, maybe. But it's 10 seasons in at this point. So there are a lot of, you know, characters that have, you know, people have come to know and love on that show. And it's just a way, again, I don't know if you've mentioned this already or not. I can't remember now because I've channeled this off somewhere else. But it's a way to deliver goods that would be more expensive to fly into certain regions when conditions are so harsh or it's just such a remote location that's
right.
Normally how they handle things. This is an easier way to do it, really, believe it or not.
So there are ice roads, seasonal ice roads, as we said, across the planet. There are some in the United States, Sweden, Russia, Norway, Finland, China, Canada, of course, Estonia, and, spoiler alert, Antarctica.
Yeah, and get this. I had no idea that in the United States there's something like, I think there are about 5 documented ice roads. There's probably more than that, you know, these, I guess, you know, what do we call them? Not authorized. I don't know how to...
Sure, unofficial?
Yeah, unofficial. That's a better way to say it. Unofficial ice roads, probably. But there are 5 official ice roads in the United States. There's almost 125 miles of ice road that appear and then disappear every season just within the United States. Outside of there, There's many, many more. I mean, when you get into the Siberian region, you get into trade between Russia and China, and there's a lot of that apparently on ice roads.
Mm-hmm.
These roads are sometimes hundreds of miles long.
Yeah. They have to be because, as you said, Scott, they're the best way to provide crucial, vital goods, not just survival supplies like food, but also food and clothing. For example, mm-hmm. but also construction materials, right?
Yeah, doesn't it seem a little bit counterintuitive that you've got such a heavy object that it would be hard to fly it there, right, or expensive to fly it there?
Sure.
You know, wherever that may be.
Yeah.
Let's say it's an island or it's a, it's just a remote town that, you know, to take the roads that go there, you know, the normal summer roads, would mm-hmm. be more difficult than to do this because, I'm getting off track, but... it would be many more days travel to take the regular roads because of the conditions, you know, the road conditions,
yeah.
versus on an ice road, which actually the conditions are better. But it seems counterintuitive to me, Ben, that you would ship something so heavy on ice that, otherwise too expensive or too heavy to ship by air. You know, it's just too expensive, rather.
Yeah.
It seems strange that you would head out on the ice with a truck, a 10-ton truck or whatever it is. And expect that to work, but it does. It works in a lot of regions because the ice gets so thick.
Right. Yeah, we're talking about areas of the world where the temperature will routinely be below zero.
Yeah.
Like that. So freezing temperature is what, 32 degrees Fahrenheit?
Yeah.
So in areas like the border between China and Russia, in January, there's an average of -4 to -13 degrees Fahrenheit.
Ooh, man.
That stuff is ice cold.
Yeah, it's a nice work. Yeah, it becomes very, very thick. And we've probably all experienced this or seen this, mm-hmm. I guess maybe. You know, if ice fishermen head out on the lake.
Yeah.
They take snowmobiles with them. Have you, I have a question for you, Ben.
Yeah.
Have you ever driven a car on the ice to ice fish or anything like that? I know the area that you're from, so likely not.
I have not.
I've never done it either, and I've never had the guts to do it. I mean, I've been in areas that it's thick enough to, and I've seen it done.
Mm-hmm.
I've been ice fishing, which is a crazy sport, by
That's
the way.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it's fun. It can be fun.
Were you in one of those little shacks with the hole cut?
You know, I've been in that one time. The other times, it's just sitting out on the ice in a bucket, and it can be miserable. It really can.
Yeah.
It can be nice, you know, a lot of solitude out there, but it can also be miserable. But if you're in one of these areas that has these towns that kind of spring up overnight on the ice, and they
uh-huh.
do, they have these incredible shanties that have, you know, wood fire stoves and, the modern devices, I guess, inside shanties.
GPS, radio.
Well, that are drug out there onto the ice, yeah, and they've got, you know, fish finders and all kinds of stuff and,
mm-hmm.
you know, lots of equipment, couches to sit on. It's actually pretty comfortable. It gets warm inside those things, and they drive their trucks out there, and they park them right next to the shanty. But it's not just like one truck and one shanty.
Mm-hmm.
It's an entire, almost like a village of people that go out and they set up this camp almost like a, and I keep saying a town. It's like a pop-up town that appears.
Okay.
So there's hundreds of people, hundreds of shanties, or maybe, you know, under 100 shanties, but somewhere around there, lots of trucks, and they are completely trusting that ice is thick enough to hold them up. And in a lot of, I mean, of course it is, you know, they check the depth and they know what it'll hold. And I'm sure that they're conscientious of not parking immediately next to each other, you know, so there's not too many trucks in one area that just sit for too long.
Right.
There's some spacing that takes place, and they understand that. But I just, this is so foreign to me to see sometimes it's semi-trucks that are traveling
right.
on these roads with loads that are, you know, 10, 11, 12 tons in addition to the weight of the truck. It's crazy. It's just... It seems like it shouldn't be able to happen that way.
Right. So the strange thing is, though, that it does. And going back to our original distinction here, which a lot of people don't make, the winter road is just snow-packed over land.
Mm-hmm.
An ice road could be a part of that, and it runs over a river or a lake or a bay. And the way that they build these things is... fascinating.
Yeah.
And I agree. It's a very foreign concept to me as well. Now, you've spent more time in northern climes than I have, but I'm going to guess, I looked into this a little bit, but I'm going to guess even up in Michigan, it's a little too warm for an actual ice road.
Ah, boy. You know, it seems like it might work for a very short amount of time. Uh-huh. But if you get to the northern part of Michigan.
Right at the mitten?
Tip. Like the very tip, like by the UP, the Upper Peninsula. I think there's actually an ice road that operates a couple of miles between the Mackinac Straits and one of the islands up there. And it's maybe a couple miles long, but normally it has, like a ferry service that goes between the two, for, goods, supplies, whatever, between, from the mainland to the island. And I think this is good for, just a few months out of the year, maybe. It's not quite, the lengthy season that maybe you might get in Siberia or some region like that. But it is something that's functional for several months out of the year, and they get their goods and materials that way. And I would suppose that people make the crossing as well, the same way, across the same road. Because it's not just, big trucks that we're talking about. It's also cars. It's snowmobiles. It's any kind of vehicle that you want to cross this road. Because, obviously, the bigger ones are the more dangerous ones, based on the conditions. But they have some tricks around this, too, Ben. There's a way that they make the ice in the ice road channel, because they clear a pathway, of course. And so you're driving on essentially like what's smooth, clean ice, really.
Yeah.
It's lake ice, so it's a little bit rough. But compared to the roads in the region, or if there isn't, like in this case, where to get back and forth from the island,
right.
But if you're talking about like getting to a distant village or something like that, a lot of times the ice road will be a far superior road to the pavement road or the gravel road or dirt road, mm-hmm. or whatever you're trying to travel, mm-hmm. because of weather conditions, and this becomes a better driving surface really for you, because you don't have any rocks, you don't have any other obstacles. It's just a straight drive. The hard part about it is, of course, understanding that, you got to keep moving, you got to watch out for holes in the ice, you got to watch out for bandits in a lot of cases.
Ice bandits.
That's something we'll talk about. But the road construction itself, and I started to get to this, and I got a little bit derailed there, but this is really weird. I had never thought of these, unusual construction techniques for it.
Sure.
Sometimes they'll auger holes on the side of the road and allow water to flow out onto the surface that they've cleared, mm-hmm. in order to thicken the ice in just that one area. So they'll make it wider than the truck would be, of course, so wider than the lane. But they thicken the part of the lake that is supposed to be for just the trucking lane, I guess. And it's pretty smart. I mean, they're augering holes in the side, and you don't have to auger a lot of holes in order to get a lot of water to flow out of there. You pump it out, of course.
Right.
And that stuff freezes so quickly on top, it's faster than it would build up from beneath. I think that's the theory behind the whole mm-hmm. thing. So you can wait for the full hard freeze, or you can kind of rush things along by creating a thicker road surface.
And ladies and gentlemen, let us know if you have firsthand experience with an ice road, because the stuff that we're about to explore is going to be unfamiliar to most people, even maybe fans of ice road truckers, but very, very important, especially if you're on the road in these conditions. So when we're talking about how you build an ice road, the most important part, of course, is safety. And ice roads are, make no mistake about it, dangerous.
Yeah.
No matter how cautious the construction crews are. I love that you mentioned the drilling technique. They also go through various types of vehicles in the construction of an ice road. So when the ice, let's take Estonia for an example. In Estonia, the ice roads can only be built when the ice thickness is at least 8.7 inches along the entire route.
Ah, you know what? One quick thing. These are monitored by road administrations, and that's why the
yes.
depth and everything is checked by a regulating agency of some kind.
Yeah, very important point.
So ice depth is really important?
Mm-hmm. Ice depth is really important, and when that is determined, and when, it meets that threshold, typically what they'll do is they'll send out something like an Argo. That's a lighter wheeled amphibious ATV.
Smart move there. If they break through, that's okay. They climb right out, right?
Right, and that happens.
How about one of those SHERP vehicles? Remember that?
Oh, yeah.
That'd be a fantastic use for one of these. Mm-hmm. In fact, you'd probably have to add extra weight to it, and maybe make a few crossings just to see if it would hold up. But those things can climb right out of a hole that's in the ice. It's really impressive.
What can't they do?
They can do everything.
Could you drive to space in one of those?
Yeah, I think you can.
Let's try it.
Yeah, build a ladder.
So even when, from the first step here, literally the first step, the staff wear survival suits and they have flotation devices in there just in case, because if you fall into the ice in these temperatures, it can be a very quick death.
Yeah, it's a death sentence, really. I mean, in a lot of cases, because you're out in these extremely remote locations. I mean, just on its own, ice roads are there because you're in a remote location. So a lot of times you have to travel long distances to get to where the ice road begins, and then even, you know, the final destination is far, far more remote, days and days away, even days travel by the ice road in some cases.
Right.
Because it's a slow go.
Right. And they, as they're doing this, they are progressively moving to different types of vehicles. So maybe they start with hand drills and augers, like you said, not just to build the road, but also to measure the thickness in the beginning. And then they move up to radar, essentially. They call it an ice profiler.
Oh, cool.
So like subsurface radar. And then once they determine the thickness, they can start to map out the route, which might change. Might have some variation season to season.
Isn't this weird? So the road's different every year, every time you travel it. So, and not only that, I mean, from crossing to crossing, it's going to be different as well because conditions have changed. You're 5 days away, you know, in another village. Yeah. You don't know what's happening. There could be a storm, you know, winter storm on one side of the road and not on the other. Mm-hmm. It's a really bizarre situation. It really is. And, oh, there's other tactics that they follow, too. Like, if they're on rivers sometimes, they'll try to hug the shoreline.
Yeah, drive on the bank.
So that, you know, for obvious reasons, I mean, it's going to be shallower water if they go in. They only go across the deep part if they have to do that in a lot of cases. So that's like a, you know, river crossings are a little different than, you know, major bodies of water. You know, when you're trying to cross a, you know, an enormous lake that's, again, it takes you 5 days to get across or something because you're just at a crawl too, aren't you? I mean, the speeds on these are so slow.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking like some of them are limited by those agencies that we talked about or the road administrations.
Sure.
Some of those, you know, speed limits are, you know, around, you know, like 16 miles an hour or something like that. You know, I mean, they're really, really low.
Which sort of gun in it.
That kind of is. I mean, a lot of times they're even slower than that. Sometimes they're a little bit faster, but really, you're never going above about 25 miles an hour. Now, if you are, I think you're probably pushing it. You're probably, you know, taking your own life in your hands, you know, that kind of thing. Because you're on a road covered with ice. I mean, at the end of the day.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're driving on water that happens to be a little bit more friendly at the moment.
And if there is a faster speed limit, please write in and tell me, because I've only seen 25 as the maximum on these on the roads that I've read so far.
And here's another important thing that may be counterintuitive to some people. An ice road should not have snow on it. They don't want a snow road.
Yeah.
And it's very important. So once they've set the route, they move away from the Argo or the Argos to a snowcat or something heavier on some tracks, mm-hmm. and it has like a plow, mm-hmm. essentially.
So it's like what they use on snow slopes, or ski slopes, rather.
Yeah, and it's not quite as heavy as, you know, a proper plow truck, but the reason they do this is because they want to remove the snow that's on top of the ice, because the snow is an insulator, so the ice firms up much better in a much more consistent, reliable way if it doesn't have the snow covering it.
Oh, okay, I get it. So it warms it up, actually. It could be warmed prematurely in that case, is that right?
It could. It might not freeze as completely.
Oh, I see. They want a solid freeze.
Yeah, solid sheet.
I get you. I understand now. So, yeah, that makes sense that they would start, you know, use a much smaller vehicle than a snowplow to begin with because, again, they're testing the ice, really. That's what the old saying comes. That's probably not where it comes from, but it fits
on
in
thin
this,
ice.
It fits in this case,
yeah.
Right?
And then the third stage of vehicle is once the ice is thick enough to allow heavy machinery, right, it can handle that distribution of weight, then that's when you see snow plows and trucks go to work, and then give it a week or two or so, they will open the road to the public.
Yeah, with constant monitoring, rather.
Yeah, it has to be.
You know, ambient temperature as well as, you know, the ice thickness is continually measured throughout that time. There's a lot of rules and safety measures put into place.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that it's safe because it's constantly changing. Every time a truck drives over that thing, and I couldn't fathom this, really. I have a hard time picturing this still. creates waves underneath the ice as a truck drives over it. And those waves can cause trouble outside of where the road is. It can cause cracks and fissures that, you know,
right.
That then lead to cracks and fissures that work their way towards the ice road and cause a lot of trouble. So this whole idea that, you know, causing waves under the surface of the ice as it drives along, you know, causing maybe big, you know, sheets of ice to dislodge from the area that, you know, that the ice road is in. Also a big danger, I guess. I mean,
yeah.
We hear every year about, you know, a simple thing, you know, like ice fishermen go out and it's a little bit too warm, but they still make the trek out there. It seems solid in the area that they're in. And they're out there fishing and they don't realize that, you know, a giant chunk of ice has broken off from the main piece and they're floating out into the lake. And it seems like it happens every year. The Coast Guard has to go out and rescue these guys maybe they don't have, you know, a boat, because they recommend, you know, at certain times of the year that you take something along with you, like a boat that you can then get into and make your way back to the main part of the ice or the mainland attached part of the ice.
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't do that, and they find themselves adrift, and that's a real serious situation.
Yes, and because the chunk that breaks off can be so large, you might not realize that you're, you know, floating away.
Well, I suppose that can happen in this case, but it seems like what would be more likely in this case would be that the trucks would break through the ice.
And that does happen. That is something in the article, which we'll post on social media too, so you can check it out for yourself and see these amazing pictures. In the article, there is a photographer who rides with two truck drivers, and they're transporting 12 tons of food. And they're going on ice road to the two drivers. This is like a every year thing, right?
Yeah.
And they're cramped conditions. It's a brutal environment. So they essentially, the three of them have to eat, sleep, and work in this cab designed for two people. This is not an extended bed or extended cab.
No. And you know what? I think we'll tell you a little bit more about this after this first break. And we're back, and Ben, we're going to kind of trek through this article a bit. I don't recommend that you print it because it's picture heavy. As I said, it's, you know, only got a little bit of text to it, but it introduces the people, the materials, the vehicles, some of the strange characters along the way, the route, all of that. It is really an interesting article. It's the one we mentioned at the head, you know, the 12 tons of food to Siberia's Arctic North. I have a little trouble with the word Siberia today. I don't know what's going on.
Siberia.
Yeah, I'll get it by the end of the podcast, I hope. But there's all kinds of just crazy stuff that happens along the way. I mean, you said that they're pretty much crammed in this truck, and that situation is a little bit exacerbated by the end, because initially there are two people. And, you know, it's already cramped enough. And, you know, they're trying to do everything in there. They're trying to sleep. They're trying to eat.
Yeah.
They're trying to, just even driving itself. I mean, it's difficult because one guy's Russian. The other guy is not Russian. He's a U.S. citizen, right?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Let's set the scene.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm getting ahead of myself.
We'll set the scene. So Amos Chappell, that's the name of the author.
Okay.
Says, for 10 days and nights, I rode with a driver named Ruslan and his young helper along the Indigirka River to deliver 12 tons of food to a town called Belaya Gora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which sounds like something out of a fantasy novel.
Well, it does, but what you just said there, that's a 10-day trip, so that's 5 days there, 5 days back, because they don't waste any time when they're there. They turn around and come right back, because time is money in this situation,
right?
Because he wants to make as many runs as possible. So the trip that is outlined by, is it Anton you said? Amos.
Yeah.
By Amos. He's pretty freaked out through the whole thing, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's scary. It's not something, and I guess the guys that normally drive this, I think his name is Ruslan, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Is the main character in this whole thing. And he's stone cold on this whole thing. You know, he's got icy nerves, maybe. That's
he's
the way
one
to put
cool
it.
Customer.
How many more ice puns can I get in here? But the guy has seen just about everything, so he just kind of rolls with it, you know? And mm-hmm. Oh, there's another one.
I know.
Well, anyway, sorry.
You're on fire.
So he rolls with it, right?
Yeah.
And the other guy, he's a little bit unnerved by the whole situation because, first, you're driving on ice with a 12-ton truck.
Mm-hmm.
Second is you're in such desolate regions, he doesn't know what to expect. You know, it's dangerous. He's with a guy that doesn't speak the same language he does, but I think there's, you know, minimal communication between
sure.
the two of them.
That's true.
It's an assignment.
And then, you know, add to the fact that there's this third person sitting there, because ideally when you're driving in this kind of condition, you want to use, as corny as it sounds, you want to use the buddy system. You want to have a second person minimum with you. So this area, just to give everybody a picture of this, this area of Russia, the Sakho Republic, is five times the size of France.
Yeah.
The country of France.
Enormous place.
And
very desolate.
And so they measured distance in days. What's interesting about this journey is about 60% of it is on an actual highway, and then the last 40%, all ice.
Yeah. Yeah, on a river, right? A lot of it is on a river. I don't know about the whole thing. There might be. I'm trying to look for the map right now, but I think a lot of it is on a river because that's where the technique that I had heard about, where they're kind of hugging the coast, happens. In fact, I think maybe the whole thing is on a river. Really, now that I think about it.
Yeah.
But interesting tactics that are used throughout the whole way, and one thing, or more than one thing, we'll get, you know, to several weird things
sure.
that happens on this trip, but they were talking to another guy. I think his name is Andre.
Uh-huh.
And Andre had, it looks like a minivan of some kind, maybe a Toyota minivan or something.
Yeah.
And he's talking to him, no problem. He decides to hop in his own car and drives off. They go around a corner, and Andre has flipped his vehicle over several times. It's destroyed.
It's totaled.
Now they have to take Andre on the trip with them as well. Mm-hmm. So the cab that was already cramped to begin with, that becomes even more cramped because he has no choice. He's in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
He has to tag along with them. He knows that he's now got a 10-day trip that he's going to have to make. All of this is really, really strange. It seems counterintuitive to me. It's amazing.
And then at the halfway point, so after Andre wrecks and they get a new passenger on their trek towards civilization, that's when they hit the ice at the halfway point.
Yeah.
So as they're driving through, they stop in the road because the driver, Ruslan, sees a truck-shaped hole in the ice in front of them.
Yeah, what do you think's there? You know, there's a chance that it was pulled out, but there's also a chance that it's still below the surface there.
I mean,
it could, because, one thing that we haven't mentioned here is that on this route alone, something like five people die each year, each winter, each season, mm-hmm. on this route that they're on right now. And, you know, when they're driving, and you said it's clear ice, right? They try to clear all the snow off of it. You can see the current in this river moving beneath the ice as you're driving over top of it. Now, how unnerving would that be to be able to see that? Because you know it's thick enough to carry this truck, or at least you hope it is.
Right.
It's cracked. It's got fissures all over it. But, again, to see the current beneath there, it's pretty much black ice, really, when you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
There's blue cracks and things. But, man, that's got to be scary, and especially first time out. I mean, he's just not familiar with it. You know, this author is not familiar with the lifestyle. So, it seems like a grim situation, you know, when you see a hole in the ice that's shaped like a truck or the size of a truck, you know what happened.
And the journalist begins to get a little nervous and starts doing the what-if scenarios, mm-hmm. the worst-case scenario kind of stuff in his head. And Ruslan tells the guy, you know, if the truck goes down cab first, then you're screwed. And so he's thinking to himself, if the truck goes down on my side, I'm going to jump out.
Yeah.
And just land on the ice and take my chances.
Sure.
Because underwater in a crowded cab, it would be nearly impossible to get out because there would be three other dudes struggling.
Yeah, and the current of the river, you've got a very relatively small hole in the ice where the cab went through, but maybe there's not even any gap where you can get back out. All this is working against you. Of course, the cold is working against you.
Yeah.
Everything is against you in this situation.
And it's not just the cold. Actually, the climate becomes your enemy, too, because they're driving toward the end of the season. the spring melt is occurring.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, that's right. I forgot about that whole angle to this thing, is that this is not, you know, the first crossing of the year or even in the middle of the year. This is at the end of the season. So ice is a little bit soft in some regions, as we've, you know, heard about with the, you know, the truck-shaped hole in the ice. And not long after this guy starts to develop his escape plan.
Yeah.
You know, exactly what he feared happens.
Yes, the ice shatters under the wheels on the river on his side. And so he pops open the door and he jumps out, and the truck is toppling, and it's and he's scrambling across the ice trying to get away from it. And then...
Well, can I stop you for a second? I'm looking at the photo of that right now and what happened, and I don't know what they were thinking when they were crossing this particular part of here, this area,
yeah.
Because it's like deep slush ruts uh-huh. that are filled with water, and they're in the middle of that, and then their truck is on one side. Like, it's tipped over all the way over.
Yeah.
Why were they even in that area? I guess maybe they had to, but that goes back to the, you know, the melt, because in the prime season, that would be frozen solid. So, I'm sorry I interrupted, but
can you imagine even
bailing out into that would be miserable. I mean, you would be soaking wet and freezing for hours after that.
If you made it for hours.
Now, that's the thing. I guess given a choice, it's better to bail out and be freezing and cold for a long time versus dead.
They got really lucky, Scott. They were fortunate because the truck held there. It kind of similar to... you know what it reminds me of? This happens so often in action movies where there's like a car or a plane that's sort of teetering on the edge of a mm-hmm. cliff, and the protagonist has to like slowly redistribute their weight
yeah.
and jump out at the last second.
Yeah.
It looks like it's hanging that way, about to fall into the water, but somehow these guys who are pros managed to pull the truck out.
Yeah, it looks like they were attaching chains to the wheels and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It makes you wonder why they didn't have those on to begin with, but I guess they need them now. So extra traction allowed them to back themselves out. And from that point forward, this is crazy. Nighttime, you know, we're talking Siberia.
Right.
Freezing cold, even though it's, you know, towards the end of the season, still freezing cold. They are just barely creeping along this river with a guy out in front in the headlights, with a probe, a metal probe, and he's testing the thickness of the ice as we go along. And then he probes for, you know, several feet, motions the truck forward, they come on up another 8 feet or whatever it is, 6 feet, and then he does that same thing again. And that's how they progress all the way through the night.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, it is, but it's also terrifying.
I kind of, you know, I'm interested.
Yeah?
I'm interested.
Would you really?
I would... ride along, but I would not want to drive on it.
Well, let me pose this to you then, Ben.
All right.
What if this was a shorter route that is one that's in the dead of winter, where it's definitely solid? You see big cargo trucks, you see cars, you see snowmobiles, every kind of vehicle on this road. It's a short road.
Sure.
But you're in a car.
Yeah.
And you need to get, let's say, from that Straits of Mackinac area to that island that we talked about. Would you drive that? Would you do that?
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, if there were that many people doing it. But again... what about like a situation where those pop-up towns appear, you know, for the ice fishing? Would you park your truck on the ice? Because I think I've seen photos of, you know, even though all that's going on, they found a soft spot.
Yeah, and, no, and I'm not gonna.
And a truck goes down.
I'm not trying to congregate with a community of people standing on a lake.
So you're saying just keep the Monte Carlo moving and you're fine.
Not my style. Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna. Drift through like a stranger in a Western film.
Well, you probably have a rental car. You would even take the Monte Carlo on the ice.
No.
I wouldn't think so. I don't think that I would ever risk it. I just don't feel comfortable enough. I've seen too many even snowmobiles, you know, drop through the ice when, you know, they had misjudged the thickness. Or I've never seen a person fall through yet.
You hear those cracks?
Yeah, I haven't heard that or I haven't seen that. And, you know, there's been a lot of... I've been to a lot of places where there's pond or lake, you know, skating. But never any danger. It's always thick enough. But like trucks and things like this and where you're probing for the ice thickness, you know, to move along 10 feet at a time, it's a completely different scenario.
But they make it through. That was sort of the dark night of the soul for these guys.
Yeah.
And the next day, the weather is clear, not a cloud in the sky. The road is rock solid, as they say. They see a tiny, tiny church.
It's
like a phone booth.
A little small town, and you know, this church, they say it's a church, but If you've ever seen that show Tiny Houses,
yeah,
it's like the size of a tiny house, but it's got a giant steeple on the top. Mm-hmm. It's the strangest looking thing with a person standing next to it because it looks completely out of proportion. But again, that's why, you know, looking at this article is something interesting, because there's so many great photos here. There's probably 40, 45 photos.
Yeah.
Really, a lot of them are spectacular. They're really, really good. But I think the guy that... the guy that's running this whole thing, Ruslan, the guy that owns his truck, doesn't he have a house or an apartment in this little town?
Yeah, he has an apartment there. So after 5 days, four guys stuck in this cab, they got to his, it looks like a tiny one-bedroom apartment, but they all got to take a shower, and I imagine just sleeping on a floor where you could stretch all the way out was like a feather mattress.
Yeah, it was magic for them. Yeah, and honestly, like, can you imagine being in a tiny cab of a truck with four guys that can't shower, can't change clothes? It's just, you know, you're eating, you're doing everything inside, you're sleeping in there. That's got to be pretty miserable, really, by the end of the 5 days.
And then they had they went further up the river, while the journalist stayed behind in town.
Yeah, that's right. You know, he crossed out because I was scared, but he says, you know, I wanted to photograph the village. Right, right. So,
sure.
I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, the guys were gone for a long time, and actually more time than he thought they were going to be gone. And he was actually getting kind of worried about them, you know, that they had maybe dropped through the ice. But finally they returned. There's no way to call them, of course, because cell phone coverage in that area is sparse, if, you know, at all. But they returned, and before they left, they offered, they gave kind of an offering, I guess, to the shaman spirits. You know, they've got this kind of, it looks like a tree, maybe, where they tie ribbons and things like that, you know, for a safe passage.
Say some prayers.
Say some prayers before they go, and talk to some other ice road truckers, you know, that are either, you know, headed one way or the other, and then head back out on the road.
But here's the problem. The road's melting fast now on the way back on that last leg.
Yeah.
So Ruslan is saying, look, we're going to drive through the night. We have to do this. And the other guy says, all right, I'm going to hang out on the outside of the truck.
Amos, yeah. Now, he decides that he's going to ride on the outside of the... He's so scared, he's going to ride hanging onto the outside of the truck. Again... I keep saying this, it's Siberia in the wintertime. I mean, it's the end of the season, and it's warmer, but come on. I mean, you've got to be really scared to, you know, clutch onto the tire, right. a tire on the back of the truck, or, you know, hanging on the running boards on the side. But when I look at this photo that goes along with, you know, this part of the story we're in, the ice road has turned into something that looks like a river itself. It's like a river on top of a river.
Yes.
There's standing water, there's floating chunks of ice, they're driving through that. Knowing that, you know, the ice below them is continually eroding.
So, as they go through the dark, this is something smart they did, Scott. They, since they only had the driver and Amos in the cab of the first truck together, it was just the two of them on the way back.
Yeah.
They partnered up with another crew, so there were two trucks traveling. And this is important because when they were traveling at night, to stay on the safe side, one of the other truckers came out and used a pole, was literally walking in front of the truck with a pole, testing the ice, and walking forward before waving the truck on. Slow process.
Again, I think that's the second time they did it. Remember the first time they did it at night, because they just couldn't see what was going on as clearly as you can during the day. But that pole probing thing, that would completely freak me out, I think, if they were doing something like that. But... I don't know. Interesting journey, really. And, you know, they're drinking from the water right from the river. You know, there are channels that form, you know, so that you can see where they're, you know, stopping to replenish, you know, the water they use for cooking, the water they use in the cab, you know, just getting a drink out of this mm-hmm. channel of water that's formed on the road. It's crazy, but they're getting closer and closer to the end here.
And we'll reach the end after a word from our sponsor. And we're back.
Yeah, and Ben, we had kind of said that we were near the end of the road here, but when they finally got back, of course, huge celebration, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm another pun. I get it. Uh-huh. I get it now. Uh-huh. So they get back to dry land, big celebration. They're very happy, you know, that they made it, and they have this. They still have kind of a long road journey to make, you know, to get back to the home base. As we said, you know, it's like what 50% ice road, 50% you know, standard road, really, this whole this whole trip, you know, round trip. But they noticed that off the side of the road there was someone that was pulling a truck, a lot like theirs, off the well, out of a ravine, maybe. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah.
And it turns out that the truck had plunged right off of a cliff, and I think it killed the driver on impact. So, you know, it's another fatality on the ice road, or sort of on the ice road. It's the road to the ice road, maybe. But it's dangerous all around. It's not just the ice. It's also the road that gets you there, you know, the snow-covered road that's out in the middle of nowhere. Also dangerous, maybe even more dangerous than the ice road. Who knows?
And on March 8th, 2016, they hit solid ground.
Yeah,
off the ice, rolling back, homeward bound. Right,
finally.
And this is the thing: Amos is done with the run, and he's going back to where he lived at the time. But Ruslan, the driver, is going to spend a couple days in town, and then drive back up to Belagora, and he would spend the summer there.
Okay, I have a note here at the end of this this article that I'm glad you said this, because I was going to bring this up anyways. I cannot believe, after what I just read, that this guy is going to spend a few days in the town that he's in, and then he's going to head back onto that same road, knowing that conditions are only going to get worse. So what's he up against on the next route? Because I think his next trip is a one-way trip, right? He spends the time in that distant village, you know, the summer months, and then he jumps back on the road again in the winter, and that's where he makes all his money. But what is he thinking going back on that road again for that, I mean, another five-day journey across ice that was already, several days before that, soft, you know, too soft, really?
Well, it appears that, first off, this is nothing new to him, and he understands the terrain very well.
Yeah.
But it's a dodgy thing, you know?
But you're risking it all. I mean, you're not only risking your livelihood with your truck, you know, because, I mean, it's going to be expensive no matter what. Let's say it goes under and you somehow can get it out, which I don't know if a lot of them get out.
Right.
But let's say that you can get the truck out. It's still an expensive repair, or it's a complete loss. And that's your livelihood. But even worst case, you lose your life.
And probably one of the most infamous, brutal calculations of that sort also occurs in Russia. This is one of the things that I found fascinating, and I want to warn you, ladies and gentlemen, that it gets pretty morbid. During the siege of Leningrad, which lasted for 29 months, from September 1941 to January 1944, over a million people in the city died from starvation, exposure, bombs. But one of the only ways that the people who did survived. And I mean, this was nasty, Scott. People resorted to cannibalism.
You know, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
You said, you know, the million people, right?
Yeah.
Of that million people, only 3% died from the bombing, which is what you would think it would be, a much greater number.
Right.
97% of that was from starvation.
And the only reason that so many people survived was because of an ice road route called the Road of Life. And it was across Lake Ladoga, and it was the only access to the city while the German army and the Finnish defense forces maintained the perimeter for the siege. But the problem was, with so many people depending on this one route for everything, food, supplies, medicine,
escape
as well, people drove on the people drove on it knowing that they were, in some cases, attempting a suicide mission.
Yeah.
People hopped on with the idea that even just the possibility of getting food to civilians was worth, in some cases, the overwhelming odds.
Yeah, they knew there was a slim chance that they were ever even going to make it. But but they went for it. They persevered. And actually, the road of, I mean, they call it the road of life. this ice road. And it was honestly, it was very beneficial to the area, of course. I mean, it saved so many people. Over 550,000 people were evacuated on the Road to Life in just 152 days between 1941 and 1942 mm-hmm. alone. That's the first year of the German blockade. But in 1942, there was another, the remainder of 1942, there was another 540,000 people that were evacuated via boat crossing. So, that part of the lake, I guess, was critical for them to escape. And between the end of 1942 and 1943, I mean, I guess over the span of 1942 and 1943, the ice road was open for a total of 101 days. And I think something like 89,000 people left at that time, too. So the number of people that escaped were great. Mm-hmm. But, man, the number of people that died in this blockade, or because of this blockade of Leningrad, just staggering number of people. A million people. Can you imagine?
No, it's haunting.
Incredible.
And the only reason that what worked actually worked was because the Finnish forces were not completely dedicated to enforcing this massive war crime. So what they did instead was they intentionally left the supply route open so that people could make it. But one thing we didn't add is that these truck convoys, and they were sending people across on horses, man.
Yeah.
The trucks and the horses didn't just have to worry about safety on the ice. They also had to worry about aircraft and artillery, because the German forces were coming down hard. As the young folks would say, they were hard on the paint.
The bombing didn't stop. That's what you mean to say, right? I mean, honestly, it's great the Finnish allowed this to happen, that they kept it open, allowing people to have just a glimmer of hope, I guess, in this dire situation, because it lasted a long time. We said it lasted, what was it, three and a half years, something like that? That's just an
29 months,
insane amount of time to be going through something this difficult. I mean, I'm completely understating this, I understand, but mm-hmm. You really, if you want to read up on that time frame or that time period and what happened there, as Ben said, it gets really macabre fast. Mm-hmm. So cautious with that if you're squeamish about it, but people resort to whatever they had to do in order to survive.
I will mention one thing that is impressive from a engineering perspective. Mm-hmm. Is Lake Ladoga is one of the largest lakes of its kind in the whole European continent, and in addition to being enormous, it's 136 miles long, 86 miles wide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge length to drive.
Yeah.
It also has unpredictable weather conditions. It's notorious for that. So people thought it would be impossible to create this until people had to survive.
Yeah.
And the ingenuity there tremendously impresses me. And I keep thinking about what it must be like to have to make that decision, you know?
Yeah, to head out onto the ice
mm-hmm.
In the first place. I mean, it's a matter of saving other people. It's a matter of, bringing back people, rescuing people,
uh-huh.
Bringing supplies, whatever it would be. There's a lot of decisions that go into this, but war brings out the best and the worst of people, and I think in this case it brought out the best in a lot of people that were coming from the Finnish side over to Leningrad to, do what they, whatever they could to help the cause, anything at all possible. And again, putting everything that they had at risk, everything.
And let us not forget that people are still doing that today. Every year, small towns across the planet, villages, isolated communities rely on these transportation routes. So we want to, Scott and I want to doff our caps in respect to some of the most accomplished and, I'll say it, badass drivers around.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, these guys are true cowboys still, right?
I mean,
like the guy Ruslan headed back out, when he knew the ice was thin. But that's just what he does. I mean, that's his lifestyle. He doesn't know anything different, I suppose, maybe. He's probably grown up with this. You know, I don't know if what his dad did or whatever, but if this is something he's done for decades, then he just knows it. He's confident with it, and he's okay with the risks as well as the rewards.
And we hope you enjoyed this episode. Thanks for listening, and let us know if you have experience as an ice road driver. You know, whether that's transport for civilian goods, whether you did it in the military, perhaps. We'd like to hear about your experience firsthand. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, where we're CarStuffHSW. And that's where you can also find this article, which we'll post on the Twitter. I just said on the Twitter? I sound like somebody's grandfather.
Put it on the Twitter.
Put it on the Googler.
Put it on the Googler.
Oh, I'm getting closer and closer every day, man. But before I lapse into full-time delirium, you can also write to us directly if you have a suggestion for a topic we should cover in the future. We are
CarStuff@HowStuffWorks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@HowStuffWorks.com.